Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Before we get started, I just wanted to again apologize for getting this episode out quite a bit late. I'm actually going to be releasing this on Wednesday, the same day as the next episode of Lost Airs. Had a busy weekend with Easter and everything else. I just wanted to throw this out there, though. If there is anybody out there who would be willing to edit my podcast for me to get rid of the ums and anytime that I say something stupid, then send me an email at thelostmeister@gmail.com. I'd definitely be interested in hiring a good professional quality audio editor and or somebody to edit and post the show notes as well. Of course, if I'm actually going to pay someone to do that, I would need a sponsor for the podcast. So if you're interested in sponsoring, if you've got a product or service or something that you think might appeal to other Lost fans, whether it's Lost related or not, again, send me an email, thelostmeister@gmail.com. Meister is M-E-I-S-T-E-R. Also, just one more note before we get started. About halfway through the podcast this week, you'll notice that the audio quality drops significantly. It starts out a lot higher quality than normal, and then about halfway through it goes back to the regular talk show audio quality. Well, I got a new microphone, a Zoom H2, and I was trying it out for the first time last week. And probably what I'll use it for is whenever I'm the only one who's called in, if nobody else has called in to participate audibly in the podcast, then I'll probably just record offline, and that way I'll have a higher quality file to work with. So I did that this time around, but the settings weren't quite right on the microphone, and it only recorded about half of it. And so the rest of it, I've gone back to TalkShoe. So once you get to that about halfway point, don't panic. You know, your speakers haven't been blown out or anything like that. It's just lousy TalkShoe audio quality. So without further ado, here's the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. I'm the Josh Meister, not surprisingly, and we just got finished watching Season 5, Episode 12, which is called Dead is Dead, and it was a Ben-centric episode, so it turned out to not be a Kate-centric episode like we were misled to believe by spoiler fix last week, so that's a good thing. And, of course, we'll find out in our discussion. We found out watching the show, and we'll talk about it a little bit, why it's called Dead is Dead. I don't have much in the way of anything really from the official Lost podcast or other sources to talk about right up top, but the latest official podcast mostly just kind of gave some prehashing of the current episode, and there wasn't too much else to it. They also revealed that the season finale special scene is going to be called The Fork in the Outlet, which was a name that the fans voted on who listened to the official podcast. So, and of course, the person who named it didn't have anything to do with the actual creation of the scene, so that's not a spoiler. So, The Fork in the Outlet. Okay, so let's jump right into this episode. And just a reminder, I don't necessarily touch on every single point from the episode, but I try to talk about the things that I think are the most significant. So there may be a little thing here and there that I may not have written down, but this show is not intended to be a complete, all-encompassing step-by-step of every single thing that happened in the episode, but just I try to focus on the main points, the things that stood out to me as probably being the most important. And of course, I also rely a lot on the folks in the chat who often have very good comments and a lot of times find things that I didn't find. Okay, so we get a flashback to 1977, and this is actually with young Ben and a kind of medium-aged Charles Widmore talks to Richard Alpert, and he says, "You brought one of them to the temple." One of them to the temple. Richard says, "Jacob wanted it to be done. The island chooses who it wants," or something to that effect. And so
right away, as soon as Charles Widmore finds out about Richard saving Ben, he is upset about it right from the start. So this is kind of the beginning of this animosity that has taken place throughout their lives between the two of them. Charles, a little bit later, he's talking to Ben, and he says, "You should be dead, Benjamin, but this island, it saved your life." And in the present, Ben wakes up and is talking to Locke. This is right where the last episode left off. And, of course, he's surprised to see Locke alive. And then Ben says, "I knew it. I knew that this would happen." And Ben says, "I broke the rules, John. I came back to the island. I was going back to answer for what I'd done. I was going back to be judged." Well, first, let's talk about, you know, Ben's comment that he knew this was going to happen. Later in the episode, he gives a very different tale to Sun when he's talking to Sun about John Locke coming back from the dead. But at least at this point, Ben is trying to make Locke believe that he always knew that Locke was going to come back to life when he got back to the island. And Locke, you know, basically says, you know, I just want an apology. And then, so Ben explains why he came back to, coming back to the island was breaking the rules. Well, I guess that was sort of hinted, but maybe what he was talking about was, you know, going after Charles Widmore's daughter. Maybe that's what he meant by having broken the rules. In any case, he says, "I broke the rules, John. I came back to the island. I was going back to answer for what I'd done. I was going back to be judged." And John Locke says, "By whom?" Ben says, "John, we don't even have a word for it, but I believe you call it the monster." So we finally get the answer, or somewhat of an answer anyway, of what the monster is. Apparently the monster is a judge. We don't really know, I mean, what kind of being this smoke monster is, but we apparently know that the purpose of the island, we've kind of found out a little bit before that it is the guardian of the temple, and now we also know that it's also a judge, which may say interesting things about Echo, which we'll get into a little bit later, and some of the other people that the smoke monster has judged and how it dealt with them. A bit later, Ben is trying to turn Caesar on John, trying to turn him against him, and Ben says that Locke's story about having killed him, about Ben having killed him, he says, Ben denies it. He says, "I didn't kill him. You know, he's obviously alive." And he says, "You know, I didn't see him on the plane either." And he says that maybe John was on the island all the time and might be deranged. So Ben is, as usual, up to his old tricks of trying to deceive people and get them to believe whatever he wants them to believe. The missing toe in the chat says, "I don't think Ben thought Locke would resurrect. He was using Locke to get everyone back and thought he would gain favor with the island." There are a couple of theories about something that Alana says later in the episode, which I'm taking notes on real quick, and we'll get back to that when we talk about Alana later. Okay, so next thing, we get a flashback to some unknown time after the end of the Dharma Initiative. And this is kind of, it's not young Ben, but it's Ben, it's Ben at a little bit older than when he was responsible for the purge and killing his father and things like that. Of course, if you remember, they had the same actor playing Ben at that period of time in the flashback where they showed Ben killing his dad. And so they continued to use the same actor, Michael Emerson, to play Ben in this flashback, in this instance, which is kind of funny because they actually have three different Charles Widmores throughout, you know, the flashbacks and the present, and yet they've only used two Bens. I guess just because of the age difference between Charles and Ben, but still, I thought that was kind of interesting that they had yet a third Charles Widmore actor in this episode. But in any case, Ben says, "Shut up and stay here, Ethan." And Ethan looks like he's probably maybe a teenager or so. And Ben goes with a gun up to Daniel Rousseau's tent on the beach. And Ben steals Alex and says to Daniel that he'll kill her if she follows him. And Ben says, "If you want your child to live, every time you hear whispers, you run away." Now, that may be a little bit of a hint at what exactly the whispers are. A lot of people have observed that it seems like the whispers often happen before the smoke monster appeared. And, of course, there are also many other times where we hear the smoke monster, or we hear the whispers, I should say, where the smoke monster doesn't necessarily appear either. And so, as LostGeek108 asks in the chat, why does he warn her about the whispers? It's kind of ambiguous to me, anyway. It seems like, I mean, obviously, it sounds like Ben is trying to help Daniel Rousseau stay alive. But it's interesting how he phrases it. If you want your child to live, every time you hear the whispers, you run away. So I'm not really sure what Ben was getting at there about what Alex would survive if Danielle survived. I don't really get what he was saying there. That confuses me a bit. Maybe he was just saying that because he was trying to save her life out of compassion, because here he is stealing her baby, and so he decided not to kill her and just let her live. And so he's helping her to stay alive so that he won't feel bad for what he's done, or as bad anyway, I guess. Another interesting question, too, along the same lines, is why exactly did Ben not kill Danielle? I mean, because later we sort of find out that that's what his mission was supposed to have been. Why did he decide to take Alex in particular? You know, I mean, he left Danielle alive. Why not just let Danielle keep her daughter? Why specifically did Ben take Alex? Unless it was just taking Alex back as proof that Danielle Rousseau had a daughter. But I don't know. I mean, that seems kind of overkill to have to do that, because obviously somebody's going to have to raise the child then. It would be awfully hard to return the child to Danielle, because, of course, I mean, as a mother who's now been separated from her baby, it's going to be awfully hard for her to deal with that. And she'd, you know, definitely try to kill whoever stole her baby if they tried to return the baby. Okay, Dano at Large gives a little clarification on the timeline. He says that according to Lostpedia, Danielle arrives on the island before the Purge in 1988, and the Purge occurs in 1992. So this has to take place sometime after 1992, because Ben is currently working with the others and living amongst the others. It could take place in 1992, because I think we discussed recently that Ethan would have been probably in his teens or so when the Purge happened. So you think 1977 to 1992. So he was probably somewhere around 15 or so at the time of the Purge. And that's interesting too. I mean, I would really like to see how Ethan ended up joining with the others. The Missing Toast says, I think the whispers can hold a lot of answers to those on the island if they follow them or something, and he wants her to stay completely away. And the Missing Toast also says, perhaps this was Ben's big test with the hostiles, and like Locke was initially, he couldn't kill at that point. Plus, the baby provides Ben with his first chance at undermining Charles in front of the hostiles, his long-term plan being to become the leader. That's an interesting idea. So you think, or your theory anyway, is that maybe at that point in time, Ben was already kind of aspiring to become a leader among the others. Guest 13 says, kind of one of the things that I had been thinking, always thought the whispers represented the monster and Ben wants her to stay away from it to be safe. Okay, next thing about my notes in the present, Locke and Ben prepare to take a boat, and Caesar comes over, and Ben indicated that it was Locke's idea, kind of covertly because of, you know, the previous conversation that he'd had with Caesar. He was able to sort of drop a hint that it was Locke's idea. And Caesar reaches for his shotgun to try to threaten Locke with it. Ben, who had apparently stolen the gun from Caesar earlier, shoots Caesar in the chest and gives the gun to Locke, saying, consider that my apology. And the other two guys that are with Caesar run off. James had an interesting idea about that before we started recording. Ben had to kill Caesar because Caesar might have told Locke about their earlier conversation. That's an interesting theory. And it certainly, you know, makes a lot of sense. I personally don't really care why Caesar got killed. I think he was obviously kind of a jerk, so I don't think anybody's too bothered that his character is dead. when Locke and Ben arrive at the main island, Sun and Frank Lapidus's boat were there, and Locke comments to Ben about Ben having a hurt arm, and he asks, you know, who did that to you, and was it Sun? And he says, no, someone else hurt my arm. And of course, we can kind of guess from later in the episode that he was probably talking about Desmond. Ben claims that the only place that he can summon the monster is from his old house, and Locke theorizes that Ben really wants to be judged for killing his daughter, is how he puts it. And we got to see a little bit of what happened. You know, of course, we've seen that before, and now we kind of got, I guess you could call it, a mini flashback through the eyes of the smoke monster as it's judging Ben. We got a little bit of that scene again, and Alex says to Ben that Kimi is serious. You know, he already killed my mom and he killed Carl. He's going to kill me. And yet Ben still chose not to do what was necessary to save his daughter. And so he feels responsible for her death. In a flashback, this takes place just after the previous one where Ben and Ethan went to get the baby from Danielle. Charles Widmore appears to be the boss on the island, the boss among the hostiles, or the others anyway. And he indicates that he had given Ben orders to kill Rousseau and didn't tell Ben about the baby. Actually, I guess that really kind of came from what Ben was saying when he was talking to Charles, that Ben says, you didn't say anything about the baby. And so Charles orders Ben to kill baby Alex, but Ben refuses. LostGeek108 in the chat had an interesting question. If Penny, Desmond, and little Charlie are all fine, do you think that any of them or all of them will return to the island? My personal thought on that is kind of based on what Eloise Hawking said. Desmond is not done. You know, the island's not done with Desmond. And so I think, as David Alpert also says in the chat, that Desmond is probably on his way somehow to the island, or is going to be planning to come back to the island. He'll probably talk to Ms. Hawking again to find out how to get back to the island. I think it's going to be simply an issue of revenge and getting back at Ben for almost killing Penny. Okay, in the present, they arrive back at the barracks. This is Ben and Locke this time. We already know that Frank and Son have been there recently and talked to Christian Shepherd. And as they're kind of standing outside the barracks, John and Ben see a ghostly image pass in one of the windows. And Ben says that that's Alex's room. And so Ben enters the house, and Son and Frank Lapidus are there. And apparently they were, you know, it was probably Son who Ben saw in the window, not Alex. And Ben, you know, I'm going to put it this way, and I'll explain why. But Ben pretends not to know about her friends having been in the Dharma Initiative. And I would say surely Ben remembered, because for one, he lived among them for at least a little while. And, you know, at least 3 years. I mean, he knew about Sawyer for sure, and at least some of the others that had gone back to the past. So surely Ben remembered having lived among them and so forth. And not to mention that the photo would have been there at the barracks ever since the others took over. Because, I mean, it was up in the building there on the wall when Christian Shepherd showed it to Sun. Sun tells Ben that Christian said, if I ever wanted to see my husband again, I'd wait here for John Locke. And, of course, John Locke is waiting outside, and Frank and Son can't believe it because they thought, gosh, I guess we're going to be waiting for a long time because John Locke is dead, and how is he going to get here? And turns out John Locke is alive, and he's waiting right outside and waves when they look out the window. Frank ultimately decides to go back to the plane to try to fix the radio. He doesn't want to trust Ben, of course. Who would? And he's not sure he wants to trust this undead Locke, and so he decides that he's going to go back to the plane to try to fix the radio. And Sun doesn't want to go, so she stays because she wants John to help her to find Jin. And then to supposedly summon the monster, Ben crawls through a tunnel. He goes in the secret passageway that we've seen before, and we got to see a lot more of how Ben actually goes through the process of summoning the monster. But Ben crawls through a tunnel, he puts his hand in some murky water, and it drains. And that's all we see of that, and then he sort of assumes that the monster is going to come after them after that. Okay, so we get a flashback, and Charles is apparently being banished from the island. He has to leave the island on a submarine because apparently Charles had a daughter with an outsider. So that's kind of interesting. So I guess we don't know who Penny's mother is then. We don't know who Penny's mother is. And so this is an interesting idea because, you know, we've gotten this idea, well, a hint last week, really, that Charles and Ellie are together somehow on the island because of the comment that one of the others makes to Richard about how Charles and Ellie aren't going to like this. And so that sort of seems to hint that the two of them are an item. And so it wouldn't seem like Ellie would be considered an outsider because she had been working with the others in the flashback, or really the time travel back that we saw with Dan Faraday and so forth. And so as a result of Charles being banished from the island, Ben apparently gets to take over Charles' leadership role. And how exactly that happened, I don't know. Why did they choose Ben, and how come he's the runner-up? That I don't know, but in any case, that's how Ben becomes the leader of the others. So who is the lady that Charles was with, that, you know, he had a daughter with her? I don't know. But again, I would presume that it's not Ellie, because Ellie certainly seemed to be one of them. Ah, the missing toe has a really interesting question. We haven't really heard much about Juliet's brand in a long time, but the missing toe says, was Widmore branded after his banishment judgment? That's an interesting theory. I kind of like that. Of course, we know that Juliet has a brand on her back because of something that she did that apparently the others didn't approve of. Okay, so in the present, Ben says to Sun, dead is dead. You don't get to come back. And he says, so the fact that John Locke is walking around this island scares the living hell out of me, is how he puts it. So, you know, that was a really interesting remark. And again, this goes directly against what he told Locke earlier in the episode. Ben is the king of contradicting himself as the situation, you know, calls for, to make him be able to convince somebody of something or other. So was Ben lying to Sun? Was Ben lying to Locke? Was he kind of somewhere in between? And I'm more inclined to believe that what he told the Sun was probably true. Although I wouldn't say that 100%, because Ben can be extremely deceptive, and just like he was trying to turn Caesar against Locke earlier in the episode, he may be trying to turn Sun against Locke at this point in the episode. And regarding the smoke monster, Ben says, I don't know where it actually is. And Locke says, I do. And by the way, just before that, it was kind of funny because Ben says, the thing that's about to come out of that jungle, I can't control. And of course, it's Locke. And I was thinking to myself, you know, you're exactly right, Ben. I don't think you have any control over Locke right now. Okay, we get a flashback to 2007. So this is before they get back on the plane. And Ben calls Charles to gloat. He says, I'm going back to the island today. And says that he's going to kill Penny first. And he mentions the name of the boat as Our Mutual Friend. He doesn't mention Penny by name, of course. We're supposed to figure that out or remember that or just be surprised about it later in the episode if we had forgotten about that connection. But in any case, the boat is called Our Mutual Friend, which of course is a Charles Dickens book, one that Desmond has been seen with. And I think that was the book that he was going to read before he died, that he was planning to read before he died. The missing toe in the chat says, it would be interesting to see if Miles can read Locke's thoughts like a dead person now. I like that idea because, you know, is Locke truly alive? he certainly seems to be in every sense of the word. Again, we talked before on the podcast about how they've given us really strong hints that this is a real legitimate, you know, resurrection, because of course Alana hands Locke a mango, he eats it and says it's delicious and so forth. And of course we have something very similar to that in the Bible. And of course there were a lot of biblical references around that time. And, you know, when Jesus goes to the disciples, one of the things he does to prove to them that he's really resurrected is he eats with them. He eats fish and a honeycomb. And so that's very, very much parallel to what happened with Locke on the island. He was given some food and he ate it as kind of proof to us, the viewer, that he's really alive, that he's, you know, really resurrected by the island. So in the present, Ben and Locke's roles are reversed. John knows exactly where he's going. He knows what he's doing on the island. And suddenly Ben doesn't know what's going on and is following blindly, which of course Locke points out. And I thought that was hilarious. And they come to what we had thought was the temple, and it turns out that it's actually the wall around the temple, around our temple is how Ben puts it, and so they're actually half a mile away from the temple. You know, the really interesting thing about that is that we've never really seen what that looks like. I'm trying to think if we actually have seen like a full aerial shot of the island, but where in the world is the temple located on the island? I know there's a lot of kind of fan maps that are out there where people have kind of tried to figure some of these things out. But I mean, this would have to be a really big wall to go around, you know, half a mile all the way around the temple on all sides, presumably on all sides. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Locke says, "We're not going in your temple, Ben. We're going under it." By the way, it's kind of interesting too there that Locke says your temple, and so he's kind of still talking like an outsider, like he's not an island person. But I guess it makes sense from the perspective that he's never been in the temple, presumably Locke hasn't. But somehow he knows that they need to go under the temple to find the smoke monster.
And interestingly, Locke doesn't really explain how he knows that either. And in fact, I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing. It's probably worth discussing. How does Locke know where to find the monster? Did he suddenly, when he woke up on the island alive, did he suddenly now have extra knowledge and he's only realizing it now as he's sort of thinking about situations? Iceberg says, so that means we technically haven't seen the temple yet, I guess. The Missing Toe says, I think the island is pulling Locke where he needs to go, like Walt pulling the birds into the window. Iceberg has an interesting theory that I kind of thought about earlier, but I don't think I've mentioned it. Iceberg says, well, Locke knew that the smoke monster was underground, I think, because he went into that hole. If you remember, Locke was dragged into a hole, but probably, I don't remember it being the hole outside of a wall with, you know, the temple wall, but or the wall around the temple, I should say. But we know that there was a hole that Locke was dragged into. Diesel929 in the chat says, I think it was a different hole. And I tend to agree with that. I think we probably would have remembered if we saw the same wall again. Yeah, the Missing Toast says the vent Locke was pulled into was in the middle of the jungle. In any case, Cerberus vents, right, as the Missing Toast also says, one of the many Cerberus vents. Right, Diesel99 says, per the Blastar map, that's where we got the name Cerberus vent from. Okay, so Ben says to Sun, if you ever get off the island again, find Desmond Hume and tell him I was sorry. And Sun says, sorry for what? And Ben says, he'll know, referring to Desmond. And so I guess, you know, we never really got to see the end of that scene, but... Well, I guess we can talk about that in a minute, too. But basically, you know, Desmond beats the snot out of Ben after Ben goes after Penny, and then that's the last we see of that scene. So I don't know if we'll ever learn more about that story, but it sounds just, I mean, it either sounds like Ben ended up killing Penny after all, or he decided against it after realizing that that Penny had a son, you know, of her own. Just kind of, I mean, that seems to be Ben's weakness, just like he wouldn't kill Danielle Rousseau because she had a daughter, and likewise, you know, he wouldn't kill Penny because she had a son. James has a really good point. Ben can't kill a mommy because he was denied his own mother's life since birth. Diesel 99 asks an interesting question. Weren't they going to kill Claire to take Aaron, though? I'm not sure about that. I don't know if they were going to kill Claire. I just kind of thought, at least, I mean, it was obvious that they were going to take her baby, but I don't think they really said whether they were going to kill Claire. I mean, you know, based on the way Ethan was all chummy with Claire, when she was in her drug-induced state and all that, I kind of doubt that they were planning on killing her. The missing toe, although, has a very good point. Although Ben helped kill many mommies, presumably, during the Purge, David Alpert points out the only mother we know of in the Dharma Initiative who had a baby was Amy. And, of course, you know, there are theories that perhaps she might be an other. And, of course, again, that would also explain why Ethan ended up being among the others, too. Okay, in the present, a survivor runs up to Frank as Frank arrives on a boat and says that Ilana and three of the others found guns. They're in charge now. So, of course, that concerns Frank, and he goes up to talk to Ilana. She grabs a gun and asks Frank, what lies in the shadow of the statue? And Frank doesn't have a clue what she's talking about, so she knocks him out and tells another survivor, tie him up, he's coming with us. So we've got a whole bunch of comments and theories about this from people earlier when we were kind of discussing this. And Diesel right now in the chat says, what did one snowman say to the other snowman? It sort of seems like that kind of a question, like a riddle of some kind that, you know, only somebody who is in cahoots with Ilana is going to know the answer to it. So was Ilana referring to the four-toed statue? Is that the statue that she was referring to? Or, you know, does Ilana work for Widmore? I mean, she's going for the guns. She obviously seems to have some sort of agenda here. LostGeek108 earlier said, to me, Ben looked very surprised to see Saeed on the plane. And that's true. I mean, Ben apparently didn't expect Saeed, but he may have assumed that the island made it so Saeed would be there on the plane. And perhaps it was actually part of a plot by Widmore to get an agent onto the island. After all, Peter Avellino supposedly worked for Charles Widmore, so it would make sense that Ilana does as well. If you remember, Ben told Saeed that the people that he killed worked for Charles Widmore. So if that's the case, and if Ilana is representing the family of Peter Avellino, it would certainly make sense that she also is working for Charles Widmore. David Alpert said earlier that Ben lies in the shadow of the statue, and it's a slam from Widmore on his nemesis. Widmore basically saying that Ben has the audacity to lie and claim he has the right to the island in the very shadow of the statue. How dare you, boy? And I have no idea how to pronounce this screen name, but Carl, a.k.a. X-Savagist X, I guess, said Frank might know because maybe Ilana or whatever is some plant, and she didn't know who else were plants along with her. So basically, Carl's theory is that maybe Ilana knew that there might be other conspirators along with her that are working for Widmore that were also on the plane. And so she's using that riddle as a way of testing Frank to find out whether he's somebody who's going to be on her side or not. Okay, a lot of the folks in the chat right now are talking about some mystery box that Ilana has something to do with. And the missing toe commented, I'm guessing Ilana's mystery box holds equipment to contact Widmore, or possibly equipment to help Widmore zero in on the island, or a portal. And if you aren't sure what box we're talking about, I didn't either, so I had to kind of ask in the chat, because a lot of times when I'm just taking notes, I don't really notice things like that, and that didn't particularly stand out to me. But yeah, there was, I do remember that when Frank walked up, that there was, you know, something there that Ilana had her gun on, and when she grabbed her gun off of something, that was the box that we're talking about now. Diesel99 says, the big silver one with bamboo shoots tied to it and latches on its side, and Missing Toe says, the big box on the beach they were moving, metal container thing. And Icebird says, oh, yeah, I completely forgot about that. She was being very protective of that huge metal box. And Iceberg says, yeah, Ben even asked if he could help with that box before he told lies to Caesar. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that completely. The missing toe in the chat says, a great twist would be if the box contained some ancient items that Widmore collected from various auctions. And I like Diesel929's theory about that. Maybe it contains $3.2 million, if you remember that was the figure that Miles asked Ben for. Oh, Missing Toe's got another good theory. How about some type of detonator for Jughead might be in the box? Iceberg gives a counterpoint to that. I don't think Jughead is controlled by a detonator, though, and even if it was, is he really going to detonate an island he wants to go back to? The Missing Toe says, if Widmore put Alana as a plant on the Jira 316, I'm wondering why he didn't get on it himself. And Bailey Bear pointed out that Widmore said in this episode that he couldn't go back to the island, and so he didn't. And he also didn't think that Ben was going to be able to go back either. Now that Ben has gone back, maybe Charles Widmore will realize that he can go back too, and maybe he'll be able to find some way. Obviously, he knows how to contact Eloise Hawking because he gave that information to Desmond, so maybe Charles Widmore will be going back to the island. So Ben says to John that he had the choice to either leave the island or let my daughter die. Ben's referring to himself, that Ben had the choice to either leave the island or let my daughter die. All I had to do was walk out of the house and go with him. He was talking about going out of his house to go talk to Kimi, when Kimi was calling him out and saying, you know, I won't kill Alex if you come out. So Ben says to John Locke, so you were right, John, I did kill Alex, and now I have to answer for that. So as they're crawling around under the temple, or at least the area inside the wall around the temple, Ben falls down into a hole in the cave, and he's in this room where there's lots of hieroglyphics, and I know there are already tons of screenshots posted on SludgeWeb and Dark UFOs sites, which you can find. SludgeWeb site is lost.qubit.net. Dark UFOs site is LostEasterEggs.blogspot.com. You know, I'm not sure if there are any translations posted yet. I think it might be a little bit early for that. It seems as though, additionally, with, you know, kind of translating hieroglyphics, it's really more interpretation, because there's not necessarily one thing that hieroglyphics mean, according to, you know, what I've heard and read. And basically, it's kind of, you know, up to interpretation. And so there could be multiple meanings for most of the hieroglyphs, but there was one that stood out in particular, and which they really focused on, by the way. There was one that looks like the Egyptian god Anubis, which, if you remember, that's the same one that we talked about as being the big statue when they had that brief flash back to some unknown point in the past when we saw the full-size statue. It looked like Anubis, and Anubis, you know, again, like we've mentioned a few times recently, is kind of the Egyptian god of the underworld, and it appeared in this hieroglyph that Anubis was talking to the smoke monster. And I guess, you know, the smoke monster, I'm interpreting that, obviously, it was sort of a representation that could have been the smoke monster. That's what it seemed to look like. And it would make sense that was the smoke monster that Anubis was talking to, because, you know, kind of as an undertaker, you know, Anubis was consulting with the smoke monster whether, you know, this person should die or not. That's kind of my take on what that particular set of hieroglyphics meant. So this basically, because the smoke monster is a judge, and Bailey Bear says, confusing me. So I'm trying to explain this. So if the smoke monster is kind of a judge, then presumably, you know, the smoke monster in that graphic, in that hieroglyph, was telling Anubis, you know, in some fashion, whether somebody should die or not. The smoke monster had made a judgment, so was speaking to Anubis to tell Anubis whether to, you know, take somebody to the underworld or not. And of course, I'll post a link to where you can find screenshots of that when I post this episode on the blog. But then smoke begins to come up out of these vents that are kind of at the base of where the smoke monster talking to Anubis hieroglyph is. And the smoke comes towards Ben, you know, kind of coming after him and encircles him, and apparently judges Ben, and then goes back into the vents, which is very interesting. And just like with Mr. Echo, we see all these different flashes of Ben's life. You know, his life is flashing before his eyes, you could say. And then the smoke just disappears into the vents. But that's not all. Then Alex appears, or, you know, Alex in quotation marks. This is really more like Echo seeing his brother appear to him in the jungle, even though his brother is dead. Same kind of thing seems to be happening here with Alex. Alex is dead. We know that Alex is dead. And the smoke monster is taking sort of the form of Alex, just like with Yemi. So it's not really a dead person coming back to life, because, you know, when Alex was done talking to Ben, she just sort of disappeared. So again, proves that this is really the smoke monster, not, you know, Alex being resurrected or anything like that. So this Alex appears and says, among other things, "I know you're planning to kill John Locke. If you try, I will hunt you down and kill you." And Alex also says something like, you will obey his every command. Say it. Say you'll follow him." And Ben says, "Yes, I'll follow him, I swear." So he makes a solemn promise, basically, to the monster, the judge, and the island, I guess, that he is not going to be responsible for killing John Locke. And if he tries, the island, it's my kind of take on it based on what Alex was saying, the island or the smoke monster will hunt Ben down and kill him if he tries to kill Locke. If he just tries to kill Locke, even. So I like that. Basically, the island is saying, look, John's in charge now. You're going to listen to him or you're going to die. That's how it is. And David Alpert agrees. That's what I got, too. A couple other comments regarding the episode. Oh, well, and one last thing on that topic. Diesel99 says, Ben is already working out a plan around that promise. And the Missing Toe says, the master is now the servant. I love it. So a little bit earlier, LostGeek108 pointed this out, or posed this question. If Penny, Desmond, and Little Charlie are all fine, do you think that any of them or all of them will return to the island? And I think we may have, I guess we did kind of discuss this before, didn't we? Out loud. I couldn't remember if I just copied this and pasted this in later, but basically I guess the idea was that Desmond probably would go back to get revenge for Ben going after Penny, and presumably all of them would not be going back because, of course, that would put Penny and Charlie in danger. On the other hand, Penny and Charlie probably don't want to be split up from Desmond. Penny would be deathly afraid, I'm sure, that of Desmond going back to the island and never being able to see Desmond again. Iceberg says, I'm sure all of them are going to be involved in the island. They all seem important, and we'll probably find out why at the end of the season. David Alpert says, Penny said she would go anywhere with him, right? On the boat in a previous episode. And presumably Desmond will go back to Ms. Hawking to find out that information of how he can get back to the island. And then presumably after that, you know, Penny's going to say, I'm going with you. I won't let you go alone. Lost Geek says that the episode that David Alpert was referring to was the episode where Desmond was looking for Faraday's mom in Oxford. Okay, another comment earlier from The Missing Toe. I think I may have mentioned this earlier too, but I kind of pasted this at the end. It would be interesting to see if Miles can read Locke's thoughts like a dead person now. And another thought, Ben got back to the island when Charles didn't think it was possible to go back. And so maybe Charles will attempt to go back since Ben was successful. He certainly knows how to get in touch with Eloise Hawking because he gave her contact info to Desmond. I think I did mention that earlier, too. One more thing, non-spoilery, just screenshot-related stuff. There was an interesting article. I haven't read all of it, but it's on Sledge website, lost.qubit.net, and it was written by Astro Jones, this article called Ben's Judgment. And just to quote an excerpt from that, unlike Echo, who felt no shame for his sins, Ben weeps at his mistake in causing Alex's death. Makes one wonder just what the pilot's sins were for the killing he got. So basically, what Astro Jones is saying here is that Echo you know, didn't feel any remorse. He felt like he was justified in what he did, and because he wasn't embarrassed, he didn't feel bad for what he did. The island passed judgment on him by means of the monster. And, of course, and Ben was the opposite. And so if the smoke monster killed the pilots, then that's kind of what Astor Jones is sort of speculating about here, that maybe the pilot had some thing that he had done that he was unwilling to repent of or didn't feel any remorse about. In any case, that's just speculative, of course. I don't think we're ever going to see the pilot probably again on the show. But an interesting thought, nevertheless. Okay, anybody have anything else before we get into spoilers? Diesel99 says he needed to repent for hitting on Claire in the airport. That's a great line. Missing Till has an interesting theory that maybe Smokey could kill as judgment as well as for course correction. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and jump right into spoilers. I don't have a whole lot this week, just kind of a little bit of a discussion of the preview for next week's episode and also the title and the centricity of the next episode, which is, I don't think, too big of a spoiler, but kind of interesting. Okay, so the preview for next week. These were my notes, and I went ahead and watched it again on YouTube, and I'll give a link, of course, in the show notes. These were some of my observations. Hurley finds a body bag back here with a body in it in a Dharma bus. He says to Miles, just admit it. You can talk to dead people. And the announcer says, everybody on the island has a purpose, and his purpose, presumably referring to Miles, could hold the answers to all of their destinies. And we see Miles beginning to talk to the dead person in the Dharma vehicle. And then at the end of the preview, someone walks in front of presumably the same Dharma vehicle. I guess it could have been a different one. And the person walks in front of a Dharma vehicle, pointing a gun at the driver and yelling, stop right there. And that's all I noticed from the preview. Did anyone notice anything else worth mentioning? I'm not sure who was the guy with the gun at the end who said, stop right there. I couldn't really tell, but it looks like the person, oh gosh, I don't know. If I remember right, I think the person might have been wearing a red shirt. So it wasn't like a Dharma jumpsuit anyway. That much I seem to remember. It's really hard to pick out just that one frame, too, on the YouTube video. And it's also the YouTube video, frankly, is pretty blurry, so it's really difficult to tell for sure. Ah, that's right. Yeah, there was one other thing the Missing Till pointed out. There was one part where some foliage was being pushed open like a door into some secret hidden area. And the Missing Till says, pretty sure the guy with the gun is Rudzinski. And that's also what Diesel929 thought. Oh, that's right. And Missing Till also points out that Pierre Chang was in the preview as well. Pierre Chang, a.k.a. Marvin Candle, etc. And Diesel seems to remember Pierre Chang saying something to Miles like, I told you to come alone, or something to that effect. So it seems as though he's in cahoots with Miles. You know, and that would perhaps give credibility to the theory that maybe Miles had been on the island before, and that maybe he is Pierre Chang's baby, you know, from another flashback. He could be as a baby and as an adult, I guess, in the same time period. So that's all possible. Just like Locke was on the island at the same time as, you know, crying to the heavens about the hatch and the light coming on in the hatch and all that kind of thing. So I guess the last spoilery thing is that the episode title for next week's episode, episode 13, is, and of course this is a Star Wars reference, Some Like It Hoth. H-O-T-H is how Hoth is spelled, and that is, of course, a planet in the Star Wars universe. If you remember that, if you're a Star Wars geek, I think I am enough to remember that was the planet on which Luke was riding the Tauntaun, and he saw the big, you know, snow monster and all that kind of stuff. I believe that was Hoth. So I have no idea what in the world that has to do with the episode, but Some Like It Hoth is the name of the episode, and it's Miles-centric. And just a little hint, a little idea of what Hoth is all about. the Wikipedia article for Hoth says, In the fictional universe of Star Wars, Hoth is the sixth planet of a remote system of the same name. It is a world covered in snow and ice with numerous moons and pelted by meteorites from a nearby asteroid belt. Native creatures include the Wampa and the Tauntaun. Man, I'm good. I'm not quite as much of a Star Wars geek as I am a Lost geek, but... David Alpert says, Wikipedia says it was pelted with asteroids. So, Trisha Tanaka sequel. And The Missing Toe says, since Hoth was the ice planet, I wonder if this means opening up the freezing area around the donkey wheel. Great thoughts, guys. All right. Well, I'm done. So thanks to everyone who stuck around to the end. Most people kind of trickled out as time went on just because obviously it's getting kind of late. Right now it's 12:16 a.m. here in the Pacific time zone. So I feel bad for anybody who might be listening from elsewhere where it's much later. But so good night, everybody, or good morning. And until next time, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister.com. That's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.